Hi, welcome to Rockle and Russell's YouTube review. Each week we'll be setting each other challenges on YouTube and finding videos for hopefully your entertainment. Hope you enjoy this current episode. So I've got nothing really to report in the way of how podcast is doing. With just under 1,600 listens, we've had quite a few So today, it shows me how many plays. We've had 43 of plays of different podcasts today. Yeah. 23 people today listen to our Sean Locke episode. 4 people listen to the Jaguar Skills Part 2. And 2 people listen to other podcasts. So outside of our first like 2 or 3 podcasts, our most popular podcast has been the one on other podcasts. Strange, isn't it? Because we haven't got any special guests. There's no one kind of...
Maybe it was people listening to see if we chose theirs.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, I can't imagine a vain Richard Herring tuning in, or the Tuesday Club gang, tuning in to find out if we spoke about them or not. Yeah, so our first ever episode of this was Celebrity Anecdotes, and we chose 3 each, and the sound quality was really poor because I was on earbuds, you know, the wireless things. Yeah. So the microphone didn't work, and it sounded terrible, and I wasn't happy with it. And I think it was putting off a lot of our, like, people would listen to that and go, right, I'm not going to listen to that anymore. So I've got rid of it. And then we're going to do another one on Celebrity Anecdotes today.
Celebrity Anecdotes, the resurrection.
Yes. So how did you just go into your memory banks and think, oh, which ones did I like? Because that's kind of what I did.
One of them was one of the ones that I nearly chose in episode 1. But back then, I didn't want to start faffing around like straight off the bat. And one of the ones that I wanted to choose is a section within a bigger clip. And yeah, with it being the first episode last time around, I didn't want to straight away start trying to say, oh, you've got to start it from 2 minutes in. But, yeah, you know, now we've been doing it a while. I don't mind making requests like that. The other one's a combination of just liking the clip and then just a fun person to end up then talking about. Off the back of it.
Really like both of yours, and I've seen both of yours before you picked them, and it's like if 1 week you weren't available or like I can't pick clips this week and I just picked 4, I think we'd probably be pretty close. There's a lot of a few times I've gone, I was actually going to pick that, and then you picked it, like and some of them were really strange, like the Alison Hammond interview of Harrison Ford and Ryan Gosling. I just thought, I don't know anyone else who's even seen that yet. We're both going to pick it for, I can't even remember the episode.
Always have to do it every night.
Now, on one trip, didn't you save 2 girls from burning to death?
I did, yes. In Canada.
Yeah?
I was playing pool in a back room of a club, me and our tour manager, Swin, and we were playing pool, and saw smoke suddenly start coming under the door of the pool room. And the fire alarm started to go, and we opened the door, and the whole place was ablaze. And I could hear this screaming from the ladies' toilet. And I went in and dragged these 2 girls off and out of there and saved their lives.
What a hero you are. And did you shag them?
Yeah.
I'm risking a life, aren't I? Come on, give me a break. I might have burned to death.
I think it was a small price to pay.
It was a small price to pay.
Yeah, so that brings back a lot of memories. I used to love the Frank Skinner show. It's obviously through fantasy football and stuff. Frank Skinner was like a big part of my life almost. Like I've really, really enjoyed him, and then watched all his stand-up. You've seen the state of the Frank Skinner autobiography I've got, haven't you? Where it's like torn pages, and because I've read it that many times.
The first one, the Confessions of a Novelty Slipper Sales.
He was a big part of like my growing up, really. And then I really loved the Frank Skinner show. It kind of went downhill progressively from when it started, didn't it? It had such a massive like viewership, and I've looked through YouTube several hundred times for his spoof of You've Been Framed, but You've Been Larding. Have you ever see that or remember it?
No, that doesn't spell that one.
If I've dreamt this, then I've come up with a great idea. But he does like You've Been Framed, but lots of different clips of like people falling into, well, it's him, falling into paddling pools and stuff like that whilst dressed as Osama bin Laden. Like, it's just so, it was, at the time, really hilariously funny. But yeah, I remember this clip, and I remember this bit of this clip just being hilarious. And so why did you choose it? Sorry to take it off you there.
Similar reasons. Like, I remember it at the time, and it's something that happened so long ago that I probably only looked for it again the first time when we did that Celebrity Anecdotes episode the first time. And I didn't think it'd be there as a clip, and then I thought, oh, actually the whole interview might be, and then obviously it was. Earlier on in the clip, to realise where that I was watching a clip that had the bit in it that I was looking for, I had to watch the whole interview. So that's kind of start a few minutes in there, didn't it? But before that, there's a story he tells about how he made a bit of money on the side when he was touring when he was younger.
Oh yeah, didn't he, like, shitting on someone's
some
chest or something? Yeah,
some bloke asked people to
in Germany.
Shit on a coffee table while he lays underneath it.
Yeah, and he used to do that to make money on the side. Yeah,
yeah.
I don't know why all those stories always start with this guy I knew in Germany.
Yeah. I reckon Germany gets a hard time. I reckon someone like Noddy Holder might have forgotten the detail of exactly where he was when something like that happened. And he just thinks, yeah, Germany sounds right.
Yeah.
I think watching it again just now, one of the reasons why I maybe ditched it as well the last time and didn't go with it was because it was like Celebrity Anecdotes. And in the nicest way possible, because of how quick and funny Frank Skinner is. I think what I laugh about and what I remember about liking about this was actually Frank Skinner's comments rather than the story.
Yeah.
So asking if he shagged them, and then I think he ends it by making a few more wisecracks, and then Noddy Holder says something like, oh, well, you wouldn't let them burn, would you? And then Frank Skinner says, yeah, well, not before.
Yeah, because Frank Skinner's amazingly quick, isn't he? And then, he kind of, on the Frank Skinner show, he almost used it as like a project for himself. He just invited on loads of his heroes, didn't he? And Noddy Holder being from Birmingham. His Birmingham accent leads so well to good anecdotes, doesn't it? When he's going, I did risk my life. Like, and Noddy Holder, I think he's really funny as well. Not a massive Slade fan, but then, like, Come On, Feel the Noise is an amazing song. But you think you forget about that because of the Christmas nonsense, don't you think?
Yeah. And I think for a few years, I had heard Oasis's cover of that song before I really knew who Slade were.
Yeah.
So for a few years, I sort of saw it as an Oasis song and then was kind of interested to know that it was a cover of theirs. So,
It's just this little kind of tidbit. Oh, didn't you just, save two people's life? And then leads into, did you shag him? Yes. Well, I did risk my life, kind of. Yeah. Fantastic clip.
He says, he sort of goes on to sort of say stuff about, oh, you know, it's rock and roll. Mm-hmm. And Frank Skinner's like, yeah, but I thought the whole point was that you don't have to work for it if you're in rock and roll, that they're like knocking the door down. You don't have to start risking your life.
Yeah, there's a few highlights from the Frank Skinner show. Have you ever seen him when he interviews Ozzy Osbourne?
Yeah.
And then he says to him at the beginning, when I was younger, I was in a band and we used to sing, and then he names a Black Sabbath song. And Ozzy Osbourne just looks at him and went, yeah, so was I. Oh, when you're talking about German people get a bad rap when it comes to those kind of things.
Yeah.
Frank Skinner made this really good point about a news story. But if you had the prefix of in America, then you can it makes sense. So and he gave the example of, did you hear about that girl that swallowed her parents? And you're like, shut up. And if someone says, in America, you're like, oh, right, how did that happen? I wasn't expecting Frank Skinner to be such a good interviewer, but he really is, isn't he?
Yeah, he was good. It ran for quite a while, didn't it?
Yeah, I think it started on the BBC and it went for a series. And then ITV picked it up. And then I think because he had an extra deal by doing more fantasy footballs and Dean and Skinner Unplanned, that he could do that sitcom, that interview as well, or have his own chat show. And yeah, it ran and ran and ran. There's some really, really good interviews on there. Noel Gallagher was a good one. David Baddiel, when David Baddiel goes on, that's really good as well, because obviously they have such a history together. Yeah, and
Britney Spears as well, didn't he?
Yeah, Britney Spears.
Every now and again, he did a big high-profile one. Some of the other ones, do you remember Matthew Kelly, when Matthew Kelly challenged him on stuff that he'd said about him?
Yeah, because Frank Skinner said, he looked like a paedophile when he was being accused of being a paedophile. And Matthew Kelly went on the show and went, why did you say that? What good would come from that? And it was really good. And Frank Skinner kind of was slightly awkward, but also dealt with it head on. It was really interesting, wasn't it?
Yeah.
He did the same thing with Ron Atkinson after Ron Atkinson got accused of, well, not accused. I don't think you can accuse someone
captured,
yeah, of racism. He called him out on that and saying how much he's let West Brom down because he was like a hero at West Brom kind of thing. You know, he wasn't solving Israel and Palestine, but he would kind of like address issues, like you say, with those things. I think that's really good. Not a lot of people do that.
I'll tell you, it's a real kind of diversion from the stuff that we'd usually talk about, but who I always remember being really good at that on the occasions that I saw it is Emma Willis, who like the kind of host's big brother. She was always really good at telling people, you acted like a clown in there. You said this, you said that, you shouldn't have said it. She was always really good at challenging people for like their poor behaviour. But I suppose it's a little bit easier with some sort of nobody who's just come out of Big Brother than it would be for like a worldwide.
But I'm sure I spoke about this before on here, but that deal with Roxanne Pallett, where she accused that guy from Coronation Street. And then she does a really good interview with her afterwards, because obviously she's saying what bad things she's done, but also addressing that she's got probably poor mental health and has her own kind of little world going on. You know, you can't have both things almost. But have you seen any examples of people walking out on interviews?
The Bee Gees.
Yeah, I think that's that's the famous one, isn't it?
Yeah. It's not an interview, is it? But Preston walking out of Buzzcocks.
Yeah.
Oh, have you ever seen Ian Lee on The Right Stuff?
No. Yeah. Is it worth looking up?
Yeah, I don't know what clips you're going to get of it, because I think he actually said that he didn't want to give them the satisfaction of getting a live walkout that would then give them more views. So he waited till the break and then he just walked off. So they didn't they didn't actually benefit from it. So he just didn't come back out. But yeah, he'd told them like six or seven times. He said they'd said, oh, can we talk about the divorce from your wife? And he just said no. And then they called him and said, can we talk about the divorce? And he said, no, I've already said no. Like, if you don't want me to come on, that's fine, but I'm not talking about that. And he said by the time he sat down, he'd been asked like six or seven times, like right up to the minute before they turned the cameras on. Mm. And then within a minute, they started asking him about it.
God, that's so bad, isn't it?
I know.
He said
that he kind of calmly told them that he wasn't willing to talk about it on air. And then when it got to the next break, he called Matthew Wright a cunt and walked off.
He's got a point in that nature, hasn't he? Because Matthew Wright is so tabloid, kind of used to being like working for tabloids and things. Like when he did drop the whole John Leslie thing, like John Leslie was like accused of like sexual assault. Yet there was nothing to say that he did or didn't do it. And there was an injunction, wasn't there? And he just went, come on, telly and just said it, I think, just to be a little bit more famous himself. I just think that's so bad that he would do that out in front of people, just literally for like an extra couple of inches in the press. another one, we should maybe do a Right Stuff episode. do you know who David Van Day is?
Yeah.
I think he's a singer in Dollar. I don't know, were they a Eurovision entry or something? And he dumps
I don't know if they were. I only know of him in the kind of modern age of reality TV.
Yeah,
I wouldn't have known who if it wasn't for stuff like that.
He splits up with his girlfriend on The Right Stuff, like live.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. I think if I was in that crowd, wouldn't you just get up and go, I'm not watching this, and just get out of there?
But have you seen the crowd?
Yeah, very good point.
I mean, I'm not one to cast aspersions, but they are a right old bunch.
Yeah. I think they're just on a holding area for like Jerry Springer.
You know, David Van Day, actually, it's good because every now and again we come across these things that have still eluded us on YouTube. I'm sure it's out there somewhere.
Mm.
There was a clip, a TV program a few years ago, and I think I watched it. I think it was one of those fly on the wall documentaries set around Pineapple Dance Studios in Covent Garden. Where like Louis Spence kind of made his name, got like famous in the celebrity world. And there was an episode of that where David Van Day and his like singing partner were featured in it. And there's this bit where it was it was kind of narrated by Michael Burke in a kind of come dine with me piss-taking kind of way.
Yeah.
David Van Day is walking away from his car and he's walking in towards the building and he just gets the key fob out and like presses it like that. And like nothing happens. So he sort of points it over his shoulder and tries to do it and then nothing happens. Just yeah. Three or four times. And it was so like, I don't know, such like an Alan Partridge moment, yeah. You know, when he's trying to do something really sort of yeah. cool and that doesn't work. And by the end, he was like having to point it. Oh, like that.
There's some great, that Pineapple Dance Studios, not great, not my cup of tea. Have you seen the Harry Hill Pineapple Dance Studios where Louis Spence keeps breaking into dance? Oh, no. That's not as good as the pineapple. I can't remember the name of the guy, that guy there. Andrew Stone, is it?
Oh, yeah, the one who used to call himself a triple threat.
When he does the Cribs, like MTV Cribs, it's unbelievable. Have you seen Harry Hill take the mickey out of him doing that?
Not often enough or recently enough to remember it.
Okay.
It sounds like something you like.
Yeah, I know it's something you would like. So I'll show you a bit of it, and then if it works, it works. If you don't,
I wonder how Pineapple Dance Studios' Andrew Stone is getting on with his quest for fame and fortune.
Today is a heavy day for me because I've been looking forward to this for a long time. And there's an old saying in the show business world, it takes 10 years to be an overnight success. And, you know, I've been trying to do this on this level for, well, 15 years.
I mean, already that's brilliant. Like, oh, fantastic. Right, we'll carry on.
That's less of an overnight, more of a mini break success. Andrew treated us to a tour of his home, including the bedroom.
So come over here, let me show you my great bedroom. It's amazing. This is where all the magic happens, isn't it?
The magic. Yeah. In no way spoiled by the words, "Stay there, darling, while I just make up the sofa bed." Andrew's got it all worked out.
My pack. A portable hob? I mean, I can take that out with me if I'm getting really hungry.
I love to play my portable hob in the morning. I love to play my portable hob in the morning.
Right, and then the drumming gets more excessive, and then Louis Spence comes in dancing like a cat. But that Andrew Stone is fantastic, isn't he? And I don't know if he's completely unaware of how sad his life looks, but I feel sorry for him almost. But he's, you know, he's one of those people you feel sorry for, but he's also asking for it. Very, very David Brent-y.
Yeah, I think a lot of the time with people like that, you get people starting to suggest that they're actually clever. They know that people are good. Like, they don't care. If it gets them on the telly, they don't care. So are they actually clever enough? I don't subscribe to that. I just think they haven't got any self-awareness and don't realise that they're being made. Because obviously Harry Hill made a long kind of sort of running TV show out of taking the mick out of clips like that. But even the people who are filming that,
yeah,
know that it's naff. Like the way that they're like imitating the original MTV Cribs by the kind of zooming in and out.
Yeah, of his washing. On like a, the washing up.
Yeah, the washing up on the training board.
Yeah. God.
And then they show it. They must show it to him to give him kind of artistic approval.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, it's good.
I think the way those things work, you sign kind of something at the beginning to say, can you just use whatever? And then you're done for.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, because I always ruin TV programs for like Zoe, like when the cameras just happen to be there when they wake up. Like I was going, yeah, but is that cameraman sitting in the room overnight, like waiting for them to get up? Like when on Top Gear when they overtake a car, like they're talking about it or whatever, and I think, well, they just happen to have a camera in that car, did they, that they overtook and stuff like that? You know, but that seems completely genuine that he is full on showing off about his life in that room. I wouldn't even fit my clothes in there.
No, so was that just like a little studio, like a small studio then? A small studio flat?
Yeah, it looks like, it couldn't be a flat, I don't think. I think it's a shared accommodation, I'd imagine. But
yeah,
because, oh, fucking hell, this is brilliant that we're talking about this. But then that little like loft room, because it's in the loft, obviously, in the ceiling, because it's got an arched roof and a skylight.
Yeah.
The size of that telly is absolutely amazing. You'd get a better, like, your phone, an iPad would be better than it. But yeah, so I do. Like Andrew Stone, God knows what he's up to now. It takes a 10 years to be an overnight success. Well, I've been doing this 15. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he ended up getting a little bit of reality TV action. I don't know if he was in Big Brother or anything like that. I'm sure he's ended up in.
Has Dolly got to grips with the lunches yet?
Yeah. Yeah, we talked her into it. Yeah, the first day was a blip, but then I sat there telling her all the good things about being on hot school lunches, like you can start to smell your lunch wafting up through the hallways as it gets close to lunchtime. That's really good. I used to really like that. Daddy used to like that when he was at school, when he could smell his lunch was being cooked. She seems all right with it now. She's good, yeah. She's enjoying it, I think.
Did you have hot lunches at primary school? Do you still remember the waft of food coming down your school?
Yeah.
What primary school did you go to?
Springmead.
Oh, right. Yeah, fair enough.
Opposite, like George Flats, around the corner from the Oak.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah, but I had 2 years of my primary school life in Portugal, which was a really peculiar school because it was just kind of four classes. That was it. Yeah, one like a reception and then three classes, but they were within reason. The classes were kind of ability based rather than purely on age.
Oh, right.
So
that must be.
I spent like a year of my time there in the in with Christian because. You know, the top class was as far as you could go. That's where he went into. I went in the one below and then got moved up. And then we spent like a good year like in the same class together.
Yeah. And what's the age gap between you and Christian? Is it 2 years?
One school year, but I was a young and
He
was old. He's in October and I'm a July. So we're not far off 2 years apart.
God, that must be horrible basing your whole school life on ability. you imagine being in those bottom sets, just being dreaded each day going to school, I think. Like, I was never top. I was
I've got memory. I think when we started at that school, because I was kind of nearly 2 years younger than him, I actually went into the class above the reception and he went straight into the top class because there was kind of, 2 years between us. And I was out of the bottom class within a week, I think, I was looking around. Like...
It's like when Bart Simpson moves. I start fires. Yeah. That.
Yeah.
Was it an English speaking school?
Yeah, it was called like an international school, but it was primarily English. And then like maybe Dutch and German people who spoke English really well. They taught Portuguese as a lesson, but lessons were taught in English. And then I went into the next class and I think I was there for the rest of that year. And then the following year I moved up. But I always remember, not that I hold a grudge.
Yeah.
I can't remember what the name was now. We had like a class test. One of the first things we did when I got moved into Christian's class, they had this test. It was in a math lesson and the teacher would read out a number and you had to write it down. So it was all about kind of getting the right amount, right amount of zeros in a million or 5,553,000, and you had to kind of, and I got like full marks, got like 20 out of 20. And then the teacher came over and sort of queried how I'd managed to get that. Maybe didn't like the fact that I would kind of new kid on the block and come in and ace their test. And she accused me of cheating off the person next to me.
Right.
And I said, but she only got 12 out of 20.
Again. So
I've got at least 8 right on my own.
Unbelievable, isn't it? Like, I remember, I think this, like, I'm pub quiz clever, right? I know a lot of information, but very like the shallow end of the pool, I haven't gone into in depth in anything really. And I've started doing assignments and things for my work to get a qualification. And I'm like, oh God, I've just never been good at writing essays and things. And I think I said to Zoe, I think it's because at primary school, they used to do like a quiz, and I can't remember these cards, but they came on us like a spinning thing. And they used to split the classroom in half and always used to answer all the questions kind of thing. And then by the end of term, it was the rest of the class versus me on like, where and what country is Picasso from kind of thing. And then you like that kind of questions. But like, I couldn't tell you anything about his artwork. I couldn't tell you anything about where he was born, if you know what I mean. But I could tell you that he was definitely born in Spain,
Yeah.
And I think just the joy of knowing that and doing that has led me to just want to be good at quizzes rather than do anything in depth.
This is based on your life. I mean, this is things...
Yeah, but... Loosely, Graham.
No, but things like, isn't the washing machine... That happened to you.
What?
The washing. You were very hungover.
Oh. Yeah.
Tell Tony Foster that story.
All their stories are really cool, though, Graham. When I was teaching, which is what this show is based on, I went home one weekend, and I was in my 30s. I was probably 33 years of age. I went home to see my mother, and then I went back, and while I was at home, my mother did my washing for me, because I was only 33. And then I went back, and on the Sunday night, I got really drunk, and then I went for a curry. And then the next day, I went into school. I went into school, and it was a school in Slough, and it was quite a rough school, but they had a really brilliant hearing impaired department. So there were hearing impaired kids who, you know, struggled. They were really looked after in the school. Anyway, I was really hungover. I went there, and about break time, I felt really uncomfortable. I thought something's not right, you know? So I went to the toilet, and I pulled my trousers down, and some of my mother's knickers had got... I got mixed up in the wash she'd done, and I was wearing my mother's underwear. And I went, oh, God, oh, no. Oh, I remember going, oh, you loser, this is such a low point, you fucking loser. And then the curry and the booze kicked in from the night before. So I did like a fecal Jackson Pollock. I started going, oh, God, not this as well. Oh, Jesus. So I cleaned myself up and I pulled my mother's pants back up. And I went back into the classroom and I saw one of the hearing impaired kids just looking at me like this. And that's when I remembered that I had a microphone directly. So maybe Man Down isn't that far-fetched.
Right, an excellent. I think Greg Davies, I don't think he's looked upon as well as he should be. He's just a great storyteller, I think. And that story's really good, but he tells it in a really good way as well, doesn't he?
Yeah.
I think, I don't know if it's true. I don't care if it is true or it isn't, you know. I'd imagine it's maybe like I do with some school stories when I worked at school. You think, oh, that's funny, and then I might add a bit in. You know?
Or if something potentially came close to happening that would have been funny, that doesn't, you can just think, yeah, that happened.
Yeah, but then I had a situation, funny enough, with a microphone the same, because I just have to do assemblies. I had the microphone, and this kid asked to play drums in my assembly, and I said, yeah, no problem. And then he just wouldn't stop playing drums, and he thought it was hilarious. To go for like 5-6 minutes, like drumming. And then he kicked over his drum kit and shouted something and walked off stage. And at the end of the assembly, I've just said to my like mate, oh, that kid shouldn't have done that. I'm fucking livid about it. He's such a little cunt. And then realized, oh, I've got that microphone thing that records everything. And then just like, oh, Jesus, like I'm just waiting for someone to tell me like I shouldn't have done that kind of thing. Because I think those microphone things record it. And then they play it back. I don't think it's actually a microphone system to, but anyway, it doesn't matter. But Greg Davies is just an ultimate storyteller. And I think his days of school, he tells us several more on the Graham Norton show, like on the school trip. Have you seen that one where his mate is really drunk, just comes out in his pants going, you guys should be in bed, like doing gun fingers and stuff. And then, you know, he's telling that story in front of Russell Crowe, Ryan Gosling, and Jodie Foster.
Yeah.
And they're loving it, aren't they? They're lapping it.
Yeah. He's, like, Ryan Gosling's the one that gets name-checked in the clip because he's the one laughing the most, isn't he? Mm. Like, he starts laughing. Russell Crowe pretty much sort of has a chuckle at the end.
Yeah.
Gosling starts laughing. What I like about it as well is Greg Davis starts telling it because it's obviously been planned that he's going to, because it's a good story. But there's a moment in it when he looks and sees that Ryan Gosling is kind of really buying into it and enjoying it. And like Greg Davis immediately shows his kind of performer in him. And he starts then really, really like laying it on even thick and almost directing it to Ryan Gosling as if he's like the one in the front row that the comedian would look at to kind of get a good reaction and a good response from. Mm. And he's overloaded, isn't it? Because usually Graham Norton isn't necessarily like three megastars and the UK person. Usually it's a bit of a mixture. So to be on that that couch with like you're outnumbered by the superstars, and then still sort of bring the house down.
Yeah, and like it doesn't often happen. I remember there was an interaction between Mark Ruffalo and Josh Widdicombe where Mark Ruffalo makes Josh Widdicombe look really stupid, and I felt really bad for him, like because Josh Widdicombe has now got to try and come back at this multi-millionaire super celebrity who's in all the Marvel movies. And he goes, "Oh, I'm not scared of something," and Mark Ruffalo says, "Girls over 12 or something like that, and it was like really like. Are you suggesting that Josh Widdicombe's like a paedophile or just rubbish with women or both? Or, and then Josh Widdicombe goes, "Oh, that wasn't very nice. I don't think the Hulk's a very good film," or something like that. And you just think, oh, when British people are on there, are the comedians, and they're just kind of saying funny stuff that the American big money celebrities aren't understanding. And that's why it's funny a lot of the time. There's some really good, Ryan Gosling's famous for like laughing a lot. If you watch any Saturday Night Live that Ryan Gosling's in, like laughing his way through most sketches. I really like him. I think he's good in every film I've seen him in. Yeah. He's in good actor, obviously, but seems like a really nice bloke as well.
What's the film? I'd seen him in like a few things, very broad, like Drive is a very sort of like hard sort of gritty film, but I've really enjoyed that.
Yeah, like the death of Bryan Cranston in that film is quite gory, isn't it? But it's such a good film. I think it's a really good film that I've only watched once, but I own it on DVD.
In fact, I wouldn't mind watching that again now we say it. But they're not things as broad as La La Land. And we saw him in something fairly recently that had Steve Carell in it. I can't remember the name of it.
Yeah, with Emma Stone as well. Is it not Crazy Stupid Love, is it?
That's it, yeah.
Yeah. That's a good film as well. What was the film he's advertising there or going selling is The Nice Guys. Have you seen that? With him and Russell Crowe.
No, but it came up at the weekend, literally the weekend just gone. Mm. Me and Emma were trying to decide what film we might want to watch on Saturday night. We kind of were hovering around kind of action comedy buddy film. Yeah. And I mentioned Nice Guys then. I've still never seen that.
Yeah, it's good enough. It's watchable. Yeah. It's not, you know.
We ended up watching The Greatest Showman. Greatest Showman.
Yeah, love that film. I could happily watch that.
Completely detoured in the end and just settled on that because neither of us had seen it.
Oh, right. What do you think?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I thought it was good.
Yeah, I think I could have that on in the background all day, almost.
Yeah.
And like, it was such a surprise to everybody that made so much money, The Greatest Showman. Yeah. And like, no one was thinking Hugh Jackman and Zac Efron starting up a circus would make so much like money. And unfortunately, that's what it's about. So that undoubtedly there'll be The Greatest Showman 2 and it'll be shit.
Yeah.
But that, the soundtrack to that, fantastic. There's like, you know, not, it's not just This Is Me. That first song, Eyes Wide Open, and the one he sung on the Brit Awards, Tell Me Do You Wanna Go, that's good as well.
Yeah,
I don't think there's a weak song in there. Yeah, really good, especially after like he was in, like Hugh Jackman's in Les Miserables. I wasn't expecting The Greatest Showman to be as good as it was. And, you know, it's a bit chick flicky, but I really enjoy it. I don't subscribe to that kind of stuff anymore, that film's supposed to be for them and that's supposed to be for you. And, you know, if I like it, I like it. I don't care about telling people now that I really like The Greatest Showman.
Yeah, well, I never saw, went to or thought I would enjoy musicals for years.
Yeah.
Like, and went to one with Emma and then another one. And then I've seen quite a few now. And they're always good as well. Just like live, good quality stuff is kind of, you enjoy, don't you? Because it's just hard to ignore how good the people are and how sort of well put together they are. And the sets, just everything. Like those like Matilda and Charlie and the Chocolate Factory and stuff like that. Even the sets are just amazing. Yeah. Like
Matilda's out of this world. It's one of the best things I've ever seen. Like you say, like I think growing up where we grew up, I don't think we could have liked musicals and got away with it. There was no way we could have snuck off. Where are you going this weekend? I'm off to see Miss Saigon in the West End. You know, but because through Zoe, really, when we first started dating, it was Les Mis came out in the cinema. So we watched that and I thought, actually, I really enjoyed that. And now I think I've seen every musical that isn't based around a film. You know, I haven't been to see Shrek or Aladdin, or I've now gone to, I know the difference between a good musical and a bad musical. So I didn't like Wicked, but I love Book of Mormon because that kind of, it's a bit more funny. And I didn't like Phantom of the Opera. I love Les Mis. I don't really know why, but it just didn't speak to me as much, I don't think. I didn't think the song's good. I didn't think the story was as good. And like, it was all a bit stupid. This bloke living under a theatre with a mask on. I didn't care for him.
Do you want a fucking joint? We're going, fucking yes, John McEnroe, you fucking maniac. You cannot be serious. And he's going, was it in or was it out?
So, have you been watching The Trip with Rob Brydon and Steve Coogan?
Love it. Love Coogan. Love Rob Brydon. Love Coogan more, though. Because you just look at him and you just go, even though he's cleaned up his shit and all that, so he's saying that, he just looks fucking like he's close to the bone.
But did you used to party with him back in
the
day?
Partied with him once. There was a wedding going on. And me and him were sat at the bar having a couple of fucking drinks in this dungeon thing. And anyway, all the people come in and they're going like, geez, Liam, are you going to sing Wonderwall? It was like that. I ain't singing fucking Wonderwall, man. No, none of that nonsense. And I think that just round about that time it was out. I was going, no, I ain't singing on that shit. He's going, leave him alone. I'll fucking sing a song. And I don't think they really knew who he is. And he got up on stage and sang It's Not Unusual by Tom Jones, but fucking mega. Yeah. So I'm at the back laughing, rolling around. They're all going, geez, I don't know what you're laughing at. He's a better singer than you. Anyway, go back to me fucking. Anyway, I think we drank a load of Guinness. I think we've gone up to our room to whatever, but none of that. And then I think we crashed out. Well, we definitely crashed out. I woke up in the morning and I see this lump in the bed. I've gone, oh God, who's this? And a little tap on the fucking, and that, it was him, and he was fully clothed. He's gone, aha!
I haven't seen him since.
Yeah.
That was it. I haven't fucking seen him since.
The whole of that interview, that whole show, is fantastic, isn't it?
The full length thing.
Yeah, just you could listen to Liam Gallagher just talk nonsense all day, couldn't you?
Yeah, I like modern day Liam. I used to like him like back in the heyday, but even as a fan, I had to admit that some of the stuff he used to say when he was like drunk and on drugs all the time was you're almost laughing at him rather than with him.
Yeah.
It was silly, and he probably admit himself that he's a little bit embarrassed by some of it. But I like the way now, because he's kind of straightened up enough to be able to sort of tell good stories and make sense.
Yeah.
But still, the content is still good.
And I think because of the history of him telling these stories, that noisy, is it? The British Masters series, I've kind of heard those stories and gone, right, can you tell us the truth about what happened there? Like kind of thing. And it, like partying with Diego Maradona, that kind of thing. And he tells these stories. They're brilliant. And I like that, really. Like, I've seen that Steve Coogan one. And I've got no, like, doubt that that happened.
No.
You know? Like, Coogan's got that. I think he's a double threat when it comes to a night out. I think he's hilariously funny and probably a bit of a caner of stuff as well. You know?
Yeah.
Lots of rumours of, like, drug taking and stuff, isn't there? But he's also one of them, if not my favourite British comedian of all time. Definitely like comedy character, actor.
He had a Courtney Love sort of...
Yeah.
...shit, didn't he, as well, during this kind of...
Madness, isn't it? How'd you go from Kurt Cobain to Alan Partridge and Paul Carf? If we deep dive into that clip, when Liam Gallagher says he's a bit close to the bone, he looks a bit close to the bone. What on earth does he mean then? Have you any idea?
Similar to what you were just saying, you can kind of see that twinkle in his eye that he's a bit of an out the edder. I like Liam Gallagher says rendition of Tom Jones was mega.
Yeah, and then
I do like that.
I also like his Irish impression after that. But he's a better singer than you, anyway.
When he says Bez from Happy Mondays has been on Celebrity MasterChef the last couple of weeks.
All right.
I think he went out last week, but it was always good value listening to him. But there's a clip of Bez somewhere in America on Happy Mondays on tour. And you know, like when people take it in turns to stand up and ask their question, and like the woman stands up and goes, oh, hi, Brittany Anderson from WLNMB Pennsylvania. Yeah. And Bez just goes, Mega, where's Dracula's from?
Did you ever see about Bez's controversy on Bargain Hunt?
No, I know that he didn't. Am I thinking of something different? Did he go on and it was him against Sean Ryder, or him and Sean Ryder together, or is that a different program?
I'm not too sure, but I know I read what happened. He's the only person to ever get disqualified from Bargain Hunt because he bought a tea set and then his girlfriend like bidded on it over the odds. I'm sure he won Bargain Hunt. And then his excuse was she wanted to buy a tea set. And it just happened to be she bidded on the wrong one, kind of thing. Just so ridiculous. And what's the point of disqualifying someone for Bargain Hunt? Oh, excellent.
I just enjoyed him on MasterChef saying things like arancini.
Oh, this is a rich vein of our relationship. You read it out, food types in different accents. You remember, because Lambert used to be obsessed with Liam Gallagher interviews, and he used to talk to you about them and stuff. And I love the one Lambert always used to kind of say about him being getting in trouble with some West Ham fans on a ferry.
Yeah.
And then like he's saying, oh, that's rock and roll. And Noel starts having a go at him. And then this conversation's recorded. And he goes, it cost us 10 grand. And he goes, you could get that 10 grand and you can stick it up your big fucking toe. Right.
Like like some European music festival, Pearl Jam, having a go at Pearl Jam. And he starts like, he's talking to the interviewer and he goes, oh, you know, music should be uplifting. I'm not into all this fucking morbid music.
Oh, yeah.
And starts going, like some of these pricks that are playing at this festival. they're all in pain. Well, my fucking ears are in pain here and your fucking voice is fucking swag.
There's that whole wind up to MTV Unplugged, where Liam wouldn't rehearse and then he was just on a bender for like 3 days. And then he just turned up and he was like, right, I want to sing. And they're like, no, you haven't put any effort in over the last 3 days. Why would we let you on stage? And then he turned up the night of the gig, didn't he? And he's in the wings. And Noel's like, oh, you turned up, have you? Like, whilst being live on stage. And then he's like, here's one that I wrote. Like, it's just wonderful brotherly like banter almost. But then you read about them attacking each other with cricket bats and stuff. Yeah, fucking hell. I've actually met one of the Gallaghers, but it was Paul Gallagher.
Dermot.
Yeah, his brother. Is it Paul? Yeah.
Yeah.
I met him in a pub outside Lord's when I went to watch the cricket. And I'm just like, oh, you're right, mate. How are you? And then your head, you're just going, what the fuck are you going to talk to him about? In no way does he want to talk about his brothers. I know that much. Yeah. I'm just like, oh, you're having a good day. Fuck, I hate myself. he seemed all right.
I remember when we were in the pub at Arsenal once, and I was stood. You know the bit of the 12 pins that we didn't, the main pub, not the big empty hall bit. So the bit that we used to stand in the side, big empty room more often than not, rather than in the traditional bit of the pub. On this occasion, we were in the pub bit. And we were kind of over, there was like a stage opposite the bar.
Yeah.
We were stood up against that. So we were quite a long way away from the bar. And you turned to me and said, oh, look, Dara O'Brien's at the bar.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, oh, yeah, it is. And you went, oh, you're going to have to stop me. I know what I'm like. I'll end up trying to talk to him. And I laughed. I sort of rocked my head back and laughed like that. And my brother said, what are you laughing at? And I turned around to Christian and said, oh, we just saw Dara O'Brien and Giblin said, you're going to have to stop me from talking to him. And by the time I'd said that to my brother and pointed at Dara O'Brien, you were stood next to him at the bar.
Oh, I used to like go to, oh, fuck off. I used to say to people like, oh, I'm just one of those people, I could talk to anyone. But you know full well I'm not. If you've got a little bit of fame about you, there's every chance I'm going to bug you to talk to you. Because I think, oh, like what I'll do is I'll just tell people I've spoke to him when I haven't. And I didn't like doing that anymore. So I just went up and I said, "Oh, hi, Dara, I'm a big fan. How did you enjoy the game today?" And he was like, "Yeah." Well, of course, that's your reaction. Of course, that's what you're going to say. And I went, "Oh, anyway, I'm a big fan."
Because there's more access. Like, if you saw Dara every now, you could talk to him about maths or space or Brian Cox. You'd have, you know, more to talk about.
But then, like, that kind of having that attitude has led me to some funny stories, like Perry Fenwick. There's a name for you. We were all in fancy dress going to the darts, and he asked me if I had a spare ticket because I was like, I bought them all. And I said, "Yeah, but we're all in fancy dress, and you're dressed as Billy Mitchell." And I thought I was fucking hilarious. Yeah. He, on the other hand, did not. And then I spoke to Andrew Flintoff in the World's End in Camden, and I just went up and I said, "Oh, hello, how are you today?" And he was like, "Yeah, fine." I said, "Oh, I've had a win on the horses today. Do you fancy a drink?" And he was like, "Yeah, go on then." And he said, "I'll have a Magnus." And I went, "Okay, I'll have a Magnus as well." So I bought him a Magnus. I came back and I said, "Oh, like, big fan of cricket. And like, I think you're doing really well. Thank you so much." Like, I can't really remember what I was saying to him. I said, "Oh, I bought a computer game the other day and you were on the front. Do you have much say in like these computer games and stuff?" And he goes, I was on the front. I was also on the back." Like, and it was a little bit of a joke, but not that funny. And then I went off and spoke to my mates again. I said, "Anyway, have a nice night." And he goes, "Oh, no, no problem. What's your name?" And I said, "Oh, Russell, nice to meet you." Walked off. And about 10 minutes later, I had a big hand on my shoulder. And he said, "Oh, Russ, you want a Magnus?" And I was like, "Yes, yes, Andrew, I would love a Magnus." And then he got me a drink back. And then I walked off. I thought, that's quite cool. We bumped into Jimmy Anderson. It just seems to be cricketers. Jimmy Anderson in a nightclub in Manchester. And I went up, being an arsehole, just like, not an arsehole, but just, I think of myself as an arsehole for actually going up. And then I said to Jimmy Anderson, "Oh, nice to meet you, mate. How are you? Like, my name's Russell from like Hertfordshire. Like, how's it all going?" Or something like that. And he was like, "Are you wearing a sweetie necklace?" And at that moment, I remembered that I was. Oh, I went, "Yeah." Nice to meet you, Jimmy.
Like, I don't think I've had any encounters like that. Most of the time I've had the opportunity to speak to sort of famous people has been like not in a surprising environment. Yeah. So it's been a thing where you know they're going to be there or you're expecting them to be there. I don't think I've met many people. It's mainly footballers. And like I say, that's because of going to the Arsenal training ground. So it's no surprise. Mm. You kind of know what you're going there for. Or I went to David Seaman's celebrity golf.
Oh, right, yeah.
That time, and so you know that they're going to be there. Mm. I've not had many sort of bump intos, as Larry David would call them, I don't think.
Yeah.
I saw Tony Adams at Paddington Station relatively recently. Like, I mean, within the last maybe 3 years.
Yeah.
And that was a very quick stop and handshake. But then again, I've met him previously. So it wasn't, I've gone to the Arsenal training ground and met him and spoken to him. So it wasn't that shocking. It was nice to see him because he's obviously a sort of all-time legend. But being in London for work a lot, you see a right old random assortment. So like Giles Brand, but not people that I've spoken to, like Giles Brandreth, Martin Lewis, the money man.
Oh, right.
I saw Simon Day. I didn't speak to him, but I walked past him whistling that Dave Angel tune from the fire. And he looked up and just smiled. He just looked up and smiled, and I just carried on walking. I was walking away and turn around and go.
Yeah. I sat next to, I was sitting on the tube, and Kevin Eldon sat next to me. And then I had lots of things I wanted to say and then said nothing because there were too many other people around for me to shout in his face, "I am Rod Hull." I'm not genuinely starstruck. I think if I've got an opportunity to talk to someone I like, I will go and do that because I think, I missed that opportunity of talking to that person. But like I was in Hertford and I bumped into Rupert Grint and I just started talking to him about, because he was in the Wellingford Times. This kid was supposed to go to a Harry Potter premiere, but he was too ill to go and he had like cancers and stuff. Rupert went round his house and played computer games with him. And I just went, "Oh, that was such a wonderful thing of you to do." I just thought, I'd seen it. He said, "Oh, right, can I get you a drink?" And I'm like, oh my God, Ron Weasley's buying me Jack Daniels and Coke. Yeah.
And yeah. Then, when you said his name Rupert Grint, I was thinking, is that the character name?
Yeah.
It's not.
Yeah. So like, I had a Jack Daniels and Coke with Rupert Grint and then had a photo with him because, you know, you need proof to show other people. But yeah. I don't think I've met any celebrities and spoke to them and thought, oh, they weren't very nice. I don't know. Maybe it's just me because I'm normally drunk when I meet these people. But but when I got like getting people into Monk's Walk, everyone that's ever come in, I thought, oh, they're an actual genuinely nice person. So like David Dean, Alicia Dixon, Jagger Skills, Tom Lewis. I met Gary Mabbutt at school as well. That was random. Him coming out of the drama studio. Who was the lead singer of Teenage Kicks? What are they called?
Oh, Fergal Sharkey.
Fergal Sharkey. Like our headmaster was obsessed with Fergal Sharkey, and he told everyone in the morning that he's coming in to do a speech about the protection of rivers or music, one of the others. And then I had no idea who Fergal Sharkey really was. And then I was singing Teenage Kicks, walking through the staff room. And then Fergal Sharkey turned around from our shitty staff room chairs. And I just was like, all right, mate. Like, just kept going. I must have told you when I went on Pointless, Richard Osmond was really cool, nice bloke. And yeah. He was like, oh, you're from Wellington City, actually. I used to live in St. Albans. I've been to your Howard Centre. Like, all right, Richard Osmond's been to Stylist, excellent. And and then Alexander Armstrong came over, obviously to meet the contestants, because you have to, I suppose, because he didn't look like he wanted to do it. I was trying to be kind of trying to relax myself by just talking how I normally talk, so I didn't seem like I was like media trained going onto a quiz show. So I thought, I'll hate myself forever if I sound like, you know, Hi there, Russell Gibbling from Wellington City, that kind of thing. So I said, he goes, oh, hello, Xander Armstrong, nice to meet you. I said, oh, Russell Gibbling, nice to meet you, mate. And he looked at me up and down and went, mate. And then moved on to the next couple. Wow, that went badly.
You know, I had to end up whipping his ass. We went to Studio 54. We walking up into the VIP section, and I'm looking around and see who's there, and looking at the girls and everything. And all of a sudden, I heard something go, Charlie Murphy! That was cold-blooded! He had this ring on to commemorate this song he had put out called Unity.
And this was imprinted in that black head of his for at least a week.
Eddie and everybody else thought that that was the funniest shit. And so that threw me in a weird space, because I'm like, yeah, this is Rick James. He's a star.
I'm Rick James, bitch. This is a celebration, bitch.
Maybe I'm overreacting. I actually went there. Like, maybe I shouldn't do nothing. But my ghetto side was going, yo, stomp this motherfucker out right here. The fuck is wrong with him?
I'm just unwinding, I'm just getting started, bitches.
He totally just wrote me off, like, I'm that nigga to steal on, you know what I'm saying?
What, you gonna smack me back? I'm Rick James, he's Charlie Murphy.
I waited, because I knew what hotel he was staying in. Eddie and them went home, and I said, y'all be right back. I shot him to the hotel. Went up to his room, knocked on the door.
So then, he comes in there, and I said, look, bitch, I'm Rick James. Smack it. Oh, Charlie Murphy!
He had his hand cocked to throw another right hand. When he's coming for his camp, bow! Caught him with the front.
He'll tell it like he gave me some kind of Bruce Lee cross kick or something.
I kicked the shit out of him. Man. Wind is knocked out of him. And then he screams out,
security!
The one in the front, he had crooked eyes and shit. His one eye was looking at me, and the other one was looking at Rick. And Rick had edged over by the window.
Now, darkness, the tables are turned. Do with him whatever you like.
Motherfuckers, take one more step. I'm kicking this nigga out the motherfucking window.
Come here, freeze!
You know you was wrong for what you did to me earlier. Look what you did to my face.
I'm sorry, Tyler Murphy. It was an accident. I was having too much fun. I'll offer you a truce. The stickiest of the icky. You want to smoke with the old boy, Rick James?
Yo, man, my forehead is bumping, man.
Now that you mention it, I think I'm bleeding inside my chest. But I got the medicine. Bitch, come over here and have sex with Charlie Murphy. I'm Rick James, bitch.
That was how that particular incident ended. But it wasn't the last time I had to whip his ass.
A bit different from a celebrity anecdote. It is a celebrity anecdote, obviously, but told so brilliantly during the Chappelle show of the stories of Charlie Murphy, where Charlie Murphy, Eddie Murphy's older brother, and normally the other person was played by Dave Chappelle. So in that case, it was Rick James. And then I love the way they go between Charlie Murphy and Rick James telling the same story. And I picked that one because that was the shortest one. But there are about four or five of them, and they're all brilliant, aren't they?
Prince, isn't there?
The Prince one's absolutely outstanding. Yeah. When they play basketball against Prince. Yeah. But then the little intricacies of that story, of what Prince was wearing and where they went. And like, I like Prince stories anyway, because he's such an enigma of a person, isn't he?
Yeah.
I think what I saw something earlier that Prince was incredibly stingy with his friends. He didn't particularly want any. Dave Chappelle plays Prince. And then Prince's last album was called something like Breakfast Time or something, Breakfast Magic. And on the album cover, rather than having a picture of himself, he had a picture of Dave Chappelle dressed as Prince. And he goes, I think Dave Chappelle was talking about it. He said it was like a Prince judo move. He was using my comedy against me, because I can't sue him for using my picture of me dressed as him. Like, you know, it's kind of absolutely brilliant. And then Charlie Murphy tells it so well. He died recently, isn't he? I think Charlie Murphy.
I don't think it's recently anymore. I think it was a good few years ago now.
Oh, right. But yeah, those stories are amazing. When you see the state of Rick James there,
yeah,
he's in all kinds of trouble, isn't he? Because he tells this story about getting kicked out of Eddie Murphy's house for just laying on his sofa with muddy shoes on.
Oh, yeah.
And then he's kind of talking about 2017, Charlie Murphy sadly died. He's talking about like his cocaine use, and just he had no idea what was going on. And I didn't take cocaine. And then it goes back to him about like 20 seconds earlier when he goes, cocaine's a hell of a drug. And then Dave Chappelle playing Rick James, where it just keeps going, I'm Rick James, bitch. That it got me every time. I suppose when that show came out, I'm probably in my like late teens, it was kind of a new thing, isn't it? Like to have a black comedy. And it really, like, I just really always found it funny. I just love Dave Chappelle, Chris Rock. They're just great.
Yeah, I went into a proper sort of run of watching Chappelle within the last couple of years, like all the sort of specials.
Yeah.
He was still making relatively new stuff, wasn't he? Netflix, two doubles, weren't there? So yeah. it was one show, but it can one, you know, press play and you get two shows.
Yeah.
Like a double header thing. There was two of those. Ended up sort of going off onto YouTube, watching old stuff, and then watching when he won the Mark Twain Prize.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
And then the relatively recent thing he did after the George Floyd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's called 11 minutes from 34 or something, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was good. Because he's good like that as well, because he's one of them people who's got a voice, hasn't he? So he sort of uses it to...
Yeah, uses his platform, doesn't he?
Yeah, and he still lives in his hometown, doesn't he? And he kind of does open air, well, especially during COVID, he was doing like open air gigs in his hometown.
Someone complained, like, too much shouting of the N-word during his shows. And he goes, well, was that me or you? Yeah, he lives in like Cleveland, Ohio or something like that, just a little town, doesn't he? And I didn't watch the rest of this, but he was offered £50 million to do another series and he said no. And he explained why, but I never looked it up.
Exactly the same. I knew there was big money on the table, but I don't know why he didn't. I was listening to Spike Lee recently on a Jonathan Ross podcast. Spike Lee, it wasn't current. It was around at the time of Black Klansman.
Okay.
So it was around a couple of years, two or three years old now.
That's really good film as well. Probably a bit more than that. Yeah.
Spike Lee was talking about when he was contacted about the premise of the film.
Mm.
And he said the first thing he thought of when someone described it to him was that Chappelle Clayton Bixby clip from Chappelle's show. He said, that's the first thing I started thinking of. And then I just couldn't stop laughing. And this person's trying to tell me about this, you know, based on a true story, real kind of serious.
Black Klansman is about a black guy who joins the Ku Klux Klan, but by phone, isn't it?
Yeah, he infiltrates the Ku Klux Klan initially by phone. And then they have to find a white colleague of his to actually play him in person when he goes to their events.
So is that Denzel Washington's son, the one that's also in Ballers and Tenant?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it John David Washington or David John?
Yeah, he's awesome. I really like him. Yeah. And then Adam Driver plays the white guy that infiltrates it. That's a really good film. Have you seen it since?
Yeah, I watched it on Netflix.
It's great.
Early lockdown last year.
And then Clayton Bixby is a blind Ku Klux Klan member who's black, isn't he?
Yeah.
There's a really good sketch on the Chappelle show, The Racial Draft. You ever seen that?
Oh, yeah.
So it's the Asian people, white people, and black people doing like an NFL draft, so Tiger Woods is finally Asian and stuff. The Wu-Tang Clan goes to Asia.
Take turns to kind of pick someone. Is yours then?
Oh, it's so well done and so well written. I think that that Mark Twain show is brilliant, isn't it? Where Dave Chappelle wins, and then Tiffany Haddish tells so many stories about Dave Chappelle. Like they went out drinking, and then went, "Do you want to go tenpin bowling?" And then each drive to Prince's house because he's got a bowling lane, and she goes, "It's me, Dave Chappelle, and Prince." Like bowling in this, like, just imagine that life, just amazing. And Dave Chappelle deserves everything he's got because he's so, so good. He's so funny. And like, the points he makes, you're like, he's like when we sort of talk about Stuart Lee, like sometimes it's not particularly funny, but I agreed the fuck out of it, you know?
Yeah.
And I think Dave Chappelle does something very similar.
A bit of stand up in one of those kind of more recent shows where he does a little bit. Stand up talking about the LGBT movement, tells it from the perspective of it being a car journey where you've got an L, a G, and a T in the car together.
Yeah,
and, I won't spoil it because I definitely couldn't do it justice.
Yeah,
it's really, really good.
Yeah,
it's
how angry certain people are with other people in the car and stuff, and it works so well. Yeah, I implore anyone to watch some Dave Chappelle comedy. I think earlier stuff isn't as good as his later stuff, but I think to get his whole kind of ethos, you'd need to watch some of that early stuff, don't you?
Yeah, I think the further back was he would have been in like on all the kind of early Def Jam, gigs, wouldn't he? He was in Con Air, wasn't he?
Yes, he's Cubal in Con Air. He dies by getting stuck in the
landing gear,
and sets a light to the Indian guy. Native American guy. Edit. but also, he's the comedian on stage in The Nutty Professor.
Women be shabbing. You can't stop a woman from shabbing.
Women be shopping will be the last words of this podcast. Subscribe to us at youtubereviewpodcast.blogspot.com or see us on Twitter at RockleRussell1.